The Buddha taught about harmony and unity. Human beings live together as groups and communities, starting at the family level. From families, there arise various organizations. These come together as sub-districts, districts, provinces, and then there are local administrative bodies that manage affairs, until reaching the level of nations and countries. All these organizations must be united and harmonious, not divided and not seeking personal benefit. Nowadays, as we all know, in every country, it is natural to have people whose minds are still not fully under control. Their mindfulness is still weak and wisdom is still limited. Speaking of wisdom, a wise person is one who understands reality. Such a person sees what causes suffering and will abandon those causes. But those who possess knowledge without right and proper wisdom may easily use their knowledge in the wrong way. If they cheat, they may cheat on a tremendous scale, and things like that. Corruption can become extremely widespread indeed. So, since human beings live together as groups and communities, it is important to have Dhamma that brings about harmony and unity. Therefore, this harmony is something of great importance. Among relatives and family members, we can see that when harmony is lacking, once greed arises, severe quarrels and conflicts occur. Conflicts over property and possessions can become very serious and widespread. Or among those conducting business near one another, disputes arising from wealth and possessions are also very common, even to the point of harming one another, or ultimately harming another's life. Such things do happen. Therefore, harmony is an important principle. Every year, on the 16th of June, the monks in the Wat Nongpapong tradition, each branch monastery, recollect the Dhamma teaching on harmony, which Venerable Ajahn Chah led and trained them in while he was still alive, guiding and training them and bringing them together. On Maga Puja Day, the monks would gather at Wat Nongpapong. On Katina Day, they would gather at Wat Nongpapong. On Venerable Ajahn Chah's birthday, on the 16th of June, they would also gather at Wat Nongpapong. For what purpose? To express appreciation towards Ajahn Chah, because he is our teacher and mentor who has taught us the Dhamma. Our hearts and goodwill as his disciples become united as one. And after he passed away, the disciples would still gather together to recollect the practices and observances that he had brought to us from his great teachers, Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Ginari, and Venerable Ajahn Tongrat. He carried on and taught those practices and teachings so that later successive generations of disciples could understand the Dhamma. Although he had already passed away, the Dhamma that he taught was left as a guideline. And the community of disciples would gather together and meet together regarding the observances and practices to preserve them, or if they should decline, then letting them decline only a little as possible. They would strive to preserve the principles and standards to keep them firm and stable as the foundation for the governance of the Sangha of Wat Nongpapong. Now let us consider this. Venerable Ajahn Chah had remarked that usually when great teachers passed away, their disciples and followers often become divided and separated. But Ajahn Chah said that after his own passing, it wouldn't be like that. He said, "I have already put things in place." And I was sitting there listening as he said this. No one else was around. On that day, I was attending to him alone. Ajahn Chah spoke, and I didn't dare to ask questions. I was still a young monk. But whatever he said, I listened and reflected upon. And later it became clearly evident that he had established standards, establishing harmony and establishing respect and reverence as something of great importance. For this matter of respect and reverence, a monk who is even just one rain's retreat senior to one must truly be respected. Whoever was ordained first, even by only a single day, should be respected, regarding him as having been ordained before us. This is respect for the Vinaya. And even those who sat together as a Sangha on our ordination day, they had acknowledged us. They received us in as a monk. So Venerable Ajahn Chah taught that, you should remember this. Among the community of monks sitting here are those who admitted you in as a monk. It is not only the preceptor who admits us in as a monk. The preceptor's duty is to bring the candidate monk, the Naga, or the novice, into that assembly, and then announce that this monk, bearing this Pali name, is about to be ordained. The preceptor requests the Sangha's approval and acknowledgement, and then the ordination ceremony is conducted through the recitation of the Yati Chatutta Kama Vacha, a motion followed by three announcements. Venerable Ajahn Chah also taught us to show respect and reverence towards the Sangha, towards the senior monks who are seated in the ordination ceremony, to respect the Kama Vacha Acharya, the formal announcement teacher, the Anusavana Acharya, the examining teacher, the Sila Acharya, the one who gives the precepts, and the Dhammacharya, the one who gives the Dhamma, in order to maintain mutual respect and reverence. So when the mental defilements are present, they refuse to yield. Someone may be more senior than us, yet we refuse to yield. We won't give in. Then the defilements can become very agitated indeed. They refuse to yield. But because our great teacher taught us to maintain respect, we suppress the defilements, restrain them, endure them, until gradually we grow up. We grow in years of ordination and growing in the heart as well. The nourishment that sustains our hearts is the growth of wisdom. Then we come to understand the principles of practice that our great teacher taught, enabling this Sangha not to split and not to become divided. If we do not respect one another, if we refuse to yield, there may be someone more senior to us, but we refuse to yield to them. We are a newer generation, with new ideas, wanting to do things in new ways. Then this can also create problems. Even in the meetings, according to the tradition of Wat Nong Papong, when there is a meeting, everyone sits on the floor. The senior monks have done so since the time of Venerable Ajahn Chah, right up to the present day. Since my own time, it has been 50 years, and adding the time of Ajahn Chah, it is 70 or 80 years already. Yet meetings are still conducted in this way. As a community, everyone sits properly, putting their legs folded to the side, or some sit in the meditation posture if their knees have problems. But they still have not adopted sitting on chairs like the meetings held elsewhere. They continue using the traditional way, preserving the old observances and practices. The senior elders whom we respect sit upon the Sangha platform, and it becomes completely filled with monks sitting there. There are probably around 300 monks on that Sangha platform. The others must sit below, sitting at a lower level, extending all the way back to the novices. But those who sit above are not necessarily pleased, because whoever has the opportunity to sit above, the closer one sits to the main Buddha statue, they gradually disappear one by one. Some become sick, some pass away, and then the others gradually move up and take their places. Those who are seated below gradually move forward and shift upward. It has always been like this, and the monks are able to live together through mutual respect and reverence. But sometimes there are various views as well. The newer generation of monks may see that this arrangement looks like a stage, with some sitting on a platform, and that it is not equal. Everyone should sit the same way. Only then would it be considered a good meeting. This is not necessarily a wrong view. It is simply another way of looking at things. However, the senior monks continue to preserve and maintain the traditional observances and practices that Venerable Ajahn Chah established. Thus, seating begins with the senior monks, then proceeds to the junior monks, then to those with fewer rains retreats, while the novices sit towards the back. This is so that they learn and understand respect and reverence, and how to participate in meetings. They gradually develop mindfulness and wisdom, allowing depth to arise within the heart. All of this depends upon mutual respect and reverence. And even though there may be differing opinions, because it is nana chitang, differing minds and differing hearts, each person has his own thoughts and views. Still, these must be brought together into one, not divided, not separated, but being united. The Buddha also taught that the practice which prevents division and separation is to meet together regularly, to consult with one another, to listen to one another, to solve problems together, and to share with one another. Whatever gains and requisites there is should be shared amongst each other, and there should be no quarrelling or disputes, no clinging to conceit and views, no attachment to us and them, no attachment to our group and their group. There should be no division, because that would be the path leading to the breakdown of harmony. And if any country loses its unity in this way, then its enemies will be able to destroy it. But if they still remain united, like the Vajrayana Confederacy in the time of the Buddha, whose rulers were united, and then King Ajatasattu could not conquer them. The Buddha also foretold about this, but if the Vajrayans failed to practice according to the principles of the seven conditions of non-decline, then their enemies would be able to destroy them. Well then, when King Ajatasattu heard this, he sent Vasakara the Brahmin, making it appear that he had been whipped, beaten, and mistreated. Then Vasakara changed sides, crossing over to live in the Vajrayana Confederacy. Eventually he sowed discord and intrigue, causing the young princes, who still lacked wisdom, to begin thinking that the shared gains were not distributed equally. They told their parents, and distrust towards one another gradually arose. In the end, when his plan had succeeded, Vasakara the Brahmin sent news to King Ajatasattu. Then the king marched forward with his army and succeeded overthrowing the Vajrayana Confederacy very easily indeed. This happened because there was no Dhamma, no harmony, no regular assembly. Each person gradually ceased to care. Each person lived separately, saying, "I am fine as I am. I will not go," and so on. At the time when I was still a junior monk, perhaps in my 7th or 8th rains retreat, I had attended the annual meeting every year. Then one year I thought, perhaps this year I will skip it just once. With only this thought, I heard a voice knocking at the door of my mind saying, "None. Go to the meeting." The words, "None, go to the meeting," were in Ajahn Chah's voice, speaking to me about this matter. That was the name by which Venerable Ajahn Chah called me. He would say, "None, none," or "Kun none," like that. And I thought, oh, even though I am 600 kilometers away, Ajahn Chah's psychic power still knows my mind. It reached directly into my heart and mind. So how could I avoid it? Not going was no longer possible, and so I went. From that time onwards, unless I was sick, ill, or feverish, I never missed it. I went every year, gathering together, seeing one another's faces, going to pay respect and reverence. And you see, it's a source of strength, of mutual encouragement. Each person comes, and they have their own accumulated merits and virtues, and they come as a disciple or a grand disciple, and it brings warmth to the heart. One feels uplifted to see that the senior teachers and elders, aged 80, 87, 85, they still come. They don't abandon this responsibility. The younger monks, 20 rains retreats, 30 rains retreats, they all gain encouragement. And especially the monks with fewer than 10 rains retreats will gain encouragement. They don't simply follow their own feelings, but come together harmoniously for the meeting. This enables the organization to endure because of its unity. Therefore, our families consist of only a few people, so they must be united. Children and grandchildren must be united. Then happiness and peace can arise through this Dhamma of harmony. But if there is no unity, then within any group, community, family or society, disorder will arise and cooperation is not obtained. When each person not only refuses to participate, but even obstructs others as well, it makes matters worse and worse. Therefore, this is indeed the teaching of the forest tradition great teachers. They taught well. When leaving to go somewhere, ask permission. When returning, pay respects. They taught unity. They taught to love harmony and taught kindness towards each other. Especially today, we can see that people are increasingly divided all the time. Day by day, the defilements become stronger. Whatever grows stronger in the mind causes things not to be as they were before. Meditation practice becomes more difficult, does it not? Take the 8 precepts, for example. In the old days, if we wanted to go and watch entertainment, there had to be an outdoor movie screening. In the rural areas, that was how it was. If it was a town area, there might be a cinema, but movies were not shown every day, perhaps once a week. But nowadays it has become much easier. Yet if you undertake the 8 precepts and then go watch a little entertainment, once you start watching, you become delighted and entertained. This time is also the time of the World Cup. Well then, you go in and watch just a little. Before long, half an hour or an hour passes and you have already become absorbed into it. Then you must cheer. You cheer for this person, cheer for that person. This team wins, that team does not. Just look at it. Is it suffering or not? It's already suffering. If the one you support wins, you become delighted. If the one you support loses, you become saddened. Sometimes the sadness becomes so great that people go drinking alcohol or taking intoxicants. They go all the way in with it, because they have become too attached to it, making it into a refuge, making it into something upon which they depend on. Therefore, all of us who have studied the Dhamma should cultivate harmony both externally and internally, that is, within the heart. Practice so that our minds can become concentrated. Practice so that our minds can become one. Then we can restrain the defilements. When the mind is able to restrain the defilements, and the mind investigates and clearly searches for the truth, then it can gradually abandon the defilements little by little. The mind becomes empty, the mind becomes peaceful, and the mind can become pure. At first, the mind is like muddy water. When concentration is developed, the mind becomes clear, honest, bright, clean, and pure, with no deception whatsoever. Then it comes to know the truth even more deeply, and after that, it becomes even easier. This arises from a mind possessing concentration, where morality, concentration, and wisdom gather together. So we should diligently train and cultivate our minds in this way. In the end, all of us will have only prosperity and only happiness. May you grow in blessings.